If you live with a dog, you probably get some health benefits from it. Not like real medicine, but a general good feeling to have a loving, fuzzy face to gaze into and hang around with. But dogs have made significant inroads into healthcare in a number of roles way beyond just delivering well-being. Now, they don't wear stethoscopes like the dog on the cover of Maria Goodovich's book, but the book goes on to talk about the many ways in which dogs have proven to be very helpful in furthering human health. Maria's book is called Dr. Dogs, How Our Best Friends Are Becoming Our Best Medicine. Maria Goodovich is a journalist with a big interest in dogs. She worked at both USA Today and the San Francisco Chronicle in the past. Maria's previous books are Soldier Dogs, Top Dog, and Secret Service Dogs. And yes, she has a dog, a yellow lab named Gus. Maria Goodovich, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, thanks. Gus and I are happy to be here this morning.
Good to have you both. You point out you've been covering dogs for 30 years now, but you write that this is a particularly exciting time to be talking about dogs, at least in this capacity. Why?
Well, it really is, because we're starting to learn so much more about dogs than we ever knew. We, dogs have always been our best friends, and we're just discovering, though, what they can do, how their senses work, that are so far beyond what we ever dreamed. People have been hunting with dogs. We know they have a good sense of smell, but to be able to use their sense of smell to help us in everyday things or in war, it's something that has come up lately in the last decade or two that we've really been discovering more. And in fact, yesterday, a big study was published about what else a dog's nose can do. We already know, in my book I talk about the amazing features of a dog's nose and how they can smell in parts per trillion, as well as 3D, and they can smell a tablespoon of something in the space of two Olympic swimming pools. It's just they can detect things so well. We have 6 million olfactory receptors, and dogs have up to 300 million, but their whole olfactory world is kind of like our visual world. One of the scientists I work with says that dogs can smell in color. So if you can picture that rich, vivid world in which they live in the world of scent, that's something that we're really beginning to tap into. And as I was saying about the study, shows that the dog's nose can actually detect heat from, they could tell some small little object from 5 feet away, which one was room temperature and which one was body temperature. No one had any idea that dogs' noses were also equipped with thermal detection. So we're still learning all these things, and dogs have been used more and more in the military. Two of my books are about military working dogs, and what they're capable of doing is phenomenal. But now, for the last decade, we've really been seeing how much they can detect on us. Everyone knows that when you're having a bad day, your dog is there for you. It's probably your body language. You're not doing quite the normal things that you would be doing. Maybe you're even reaching out for more hugs. But lately, there have been some studies showing that dogs can detect emotions by scent. So that just taps into a little bit of what they can do. But they've been used more and more in the world of, I call them doctor dogs, but they're medical detection dogs. And the things they can do are phenomenal.
They really are. And I appreciate the reminder that dogs do smell in color, because, the fact is it is a much more powerful organ than their eyes, I suppose. And so they get most of their information that way. Now, with that powerful a smelling organ, is there no judgment? Is there no bad smell? Is that why dogs roll in things? Apparently Gus does a lot.
Well, in the book, yeah, you read about Gus. I'm sure many of the listeners have dogs who like to roll in the things that you really, really don't want them to roll in.
Yeah, Churchill loves the bird poop, yeah.
Oh, bird poop, that's great. I would take horse poop, but Gus, we live in San Francisco, and sometimes there are people who live in the park, and Gus rolls in the things they leave behind, if you know what I mean.
Uh-huh.
And it's horrifying, and I don't know why, but yeah, he doesn't judge. He actually, I think, the worse the scent, the better. And in the book, I address this a little bit, because dogs, why does Gus roll in these things, and could Gus be a good doctor dog, was the question I brought up. It's thought that Gus and other dogs perhaps roll in different scents to become that. He loves to roll in coyote poop and horse poop, and then other dogs come up to him on the walk and in the trails, and they treat him like he's a rock star. And he stands there like, yeah, I'm cool, aren't I? And they'll sniff once, and he will be so proud. And so we really don't know what that's all about, but we can actually work with their sense of smell in a different way now that we can target the smells we would like them to target. Like they can, it's been found that dogs can detect cancer, but there have been some freelance dogs moonlighting, just like your own dog who can detect, who have said to their person, you've got to check this out by continuing to paw or smell at a certain spot on the person's body. They get it checked out and it shows that they have cancer. But this is also being harnessed in laboratories around the world. Not with beagles in cages, but where dogs come in for the day, they're volunteers or they're fosters, and they do their work and go home. And it's fascinating.
Now, Maria, we have about a minute to a break here. I just want to ask about a little more directly about cancer detection dogs, and you have a particular interest here.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we have ovarian cancer seems to run in the family, and that is a cancer that is very hard to detect at early enough stages to treat effectively. And it's at the University of Pennsylvania, the Working Dog Center, dogs there have been detecting cancer at stage one, which would be amazing if that could be used. They're trying to work that out into a technology where that could be used. Like they could scent stage one or even earlier ovarian cancer. This could be a huge lifesaver for so many women. And I'm really hopeful that that will turn into something. And it's not just in a tumor, they're smelling it in one drop of plasma from someone with ovarian cancer versus one drop of plasma from someone without. It's incredible.
One drop? That's it?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Okay, well, much more to learn about dogs that have medical capabilities, and it sounds like a lot of dogs do have these. Maria Gudovich's book is called Dr. Dogs, How Our Best Friends Are Becoming Our Best Medicine. We'll get into a much broader discussion of all the things that dogs can do, and the stories are shocking, fascinating, and Maria has gone all over the world to find them. We'll come back to the Jefferson Exchange and talk more with Maria. You're welcome to join the conversation by phone and email when we return in a minute 15. Is that actually Gus's picture on the cover of the book, Maria?
No, Gus is very upset about that. It's a very pretty golden retriever. It could have been Gus. He says it should have been Gus, but oh well. This is a, we don't really know who this dog is. The art department got it and put a little stethoscope on him or her. It's adorable, though. Gus is actually the first picture in the color photo section in the middle of the book, and he is covered with some kind of poop.
Of course, as Gust does, yes. Okay. Let's go further into disease detection. We've talked about cancer already, and we'll talk about it some more, too. But dogs and blood sugar, I mean, this sounds complicated, but apparently there are clues that even humans could pick up.
Yeah, well, what's amazing is that well-trained dogs are able to detect drops in blood sugar about 15 to 20 minutes ahead of the best monitors at this point in technology. So if someone has a glucose monitor, that will be a little behind because dogs are detecting the drop in blood sugar for people with, you know, diabetes. This is type 1 diabetes that the dogs are trained for because that's, kind of more life and death. And they are able to detect this in real time. So when your blood sugar is dropping, the monitors are about 15 to 20 minutes behind that because they're relying on something else, which is complicated to explain. But the dogs are able to sniff that out in real time. So the dog will do an alert, and it takes a long time to really train a dog well. And there are places that do this, and they are able to tell this. And then the dog will sit and stare, or there's something that a lot of diabetic alert dogs have attached to their collars. It's called a bringsel, and it's like a tube covered with a durable cloth, and the dog will grab that for extra attention so you don't think, oh, is my dog sitting and staring at me because he wants a treat, or is that because I'm about to have a really bad low blood sugar? And the dog will grab the bringsel. Sometimes they'll stretch. There are some places that train the dog on high and low blood sugar, and the dog will do an alert, and they'll say, is it high or low? And the dog will stretch like a downward dog for low or do a high five for high.
Wow.
It's amazing. And so the thing is, we really don't know what it is that dogs are detecting. there have been some questions about there were a couple of guesses, and the scientists have thought they had a couple of compounds or combinations of volatile organic compounds, but it wasn't anything. And so far, they don't really know what it is that the dogs are smelling. And indeed, it is smell, because there may certainly be signals that we're giving off that we don't even know, that aren't olfactory. Maybe, our hearts are getting more rapid, or there's certain body language or something that they're detecting. But the dogs are trained on the scent of people with low blood sugar. So they get rewarded when they alert to that scent, and they don't get rewarded for normal blood sugar. So they get rewarded for the drop. There are some really good places that train them with great rigor, and it's all positive training. It's all reward-based training, which is so wonderful. And the dogs love what they do. They live for it. And when they're in training, it's more for the fun and the treat, or the toy. But when they're working with someone whose life depends on them, they can tell. They get more than just the treat. I think the family comes to love them so much for basically saving this person's life on a daily basis.
Let's talk about one of those, Clay Ronk and his dog, Whitley. These guys are very close companions.
Yeah, Clay was he was only about 7 when they discovered that he has type 1 diabetes, and he was medevaced from his home in Northern California to UCSF, University of California, San Francisco Emergency Room. He was very close to not making it, but he did, and the family immediately learned about diabetic alert dogs. And there's a wonderful organization in Northern California called Dogs for Diabetics, and they hope to get a dog for their son immediately, but they don't. That organization does not supply dogs for children. They waited and waited, and long story short, when he was about 13 or 14, he went through rigorous training with them, and he got a dog named Whitley, who really early on, the first weekend, he actually took her home for a trial, just to see how it worked out with them. She alerted to a low blood sugar, and they couldn't believe it. The family was they were dancing around the house, and she detects she will wake up from sleeping and detect his low blood sugar. That's nothing they're trained on. It's just something that some dogs are able to do. Like if you're sleeping and you smell bacon cooking or coffee, you might wake up. So that scent means so much to her. And for her, it's more than the treat. She is like his second mom, his auntie, his nurse, his best friend. And she is always, when he goes away, he's actually training to work in the medical field in emergency medicine. He's already EMT, I think he may already be a paramedic. He's studying now in college. She's with him in college. She was with him all through high school, and she looks after him, and when he goes out on some work detail or whatever, she will sit by the door, and when he was living at home, his mom would say she would just sit there and wait for him.
Wow.
And it's very sad, but they had such a bond, and that's the thing. The bond that these doctor dogs have with their people is unbelievable. I mean, I think I have a great bond with Gus, but it's that much more when your life depends on your dog, and your dog is that, much a part of your life.
Maria Goodavage, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Doctor Dogs, How Our Best Friends Are Becoming Our Best Medicine. Let's talk about seizure dogs like Nina. You take us to Croatia to meet her. I mean, how does she respond when her owner has an epileptic seizure?
Well, Nina is, it's a very unusual example where in Croatia, they don't really have, it's rare in the U.S. even to have dogs trained to alert to seizures. Because until recently, it wasn't thought that seizures have a scent that go along with them. But in Croatia, they were starting to do this years ago, and this young man has terrible, many seizure disorders. He has a seizure disorder that gives him many different types of seizures. And they were training Nina just to be a companion. And then eventually she learned, something happens here, and she put it together herself that he was going to have a seizure, and she started, basically it was acting nervous and being concerned, and she was always, she would come eventually, when they realized that she was alerting to these seizures, she would come in from outside and start whimpering and crying. And they've had two dogs now that they've done this with, and both one dog learned from the other dog. She kind of trained the next dog, and this is you know, beautiful passing of the baton. And so she'll be concerned, and she is another one who will wake up from a sleep. It's not necessarily that he's doing there's a certain body language, because she will be outside and come running in, and you know, he will then eventually, within 10 minutes usually, something will happen with him. And she is another one of those dogs. So she's such a vital part of the family, and she's so beloved. And it's not something they trained her with. Some dogs just learn this. In fact, most of the seizure alert dogs, the dogs who can do this so far, have been companion dogs or dogs who were seizure response dogs. And seizure response dogs are trained to kind of press a 911 button. They can call 911. Basically, it's a life alert type of button where they reach help, or they're there with a bag of medicine or something for the person. But then these dogs are so attuned to their people that they begin to figure out, well, this is happening, and then the people can work to get them to alert. Instead of crying and being nervous, they sit or they do something that's unusual, and they'll say, uh-oh. And they're able to lie down. They're able to get to a safe place ahead of time, and that's a lifesaver.
They're not doing face plants onto concrete and stuff like
exactly,
that.
Exactly, yes. Exactly. Actually, a woman I wrote about, Terry Craik, in Minnesota had that, and her dog, Brody, is able to just tell her ahead of time. She got her life back. Many people get their lives back, especially in seizure alert dogs, when their dog is with them, because they won't seize with no one around them or in the middle of a place without even at least being able to sit down and tell someone. And so it's a growing job for doctor dogs. It's a growing specialty, and the dogs, again, they're so devoted, and it's not like they're working all the time and slaving away. I mean, they're having a great life. These dogs get playtime, they get play dates, they do all those things, but this is their job. And dogs love jobs. They love to have a job in which their paycheck in training and in real life is, you know, lots of praise and some kind of treat or toy, and then it becomes, you know, wow, the dog knows that they're doing something really special, and that alone can be the paycheck sometimes.
Maria Goodavage, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, has written several books about dogs, has made a career out of writing about dogs, and her latest book is called Doctor Dogs, How Our Best Friends Are Becoming Our Best Medicine. It's got many stories of dogs that detect cancers and seizures and changes in blood pressure and all sorts of things, and even expanding into other realms as well. 800-838-3760 if you got a question or a story to share. And you can also send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. There's been, it seems like, a bit of scientific debate about the training of seizure dogs. Can you outline that for us, Maria?
Yeah. So there are, until recently, actually, the Epilepsy Foundation, I think that's what it's called, sorry, said that you cannot train a dog to detect seizures. That's just something and you can't train them by scent, and some places were doing that recently. Dogs have been trained on scent. What happens is it's mostly individuals. This is not like dogs for diabetics, where they will train several dogs on many scents. Let's say you have a dog, and you start taking. One technique is to basically, when you're in a seizure, someone can swab your skin or get a saliva sample, and get a lot of those, or even pre-seizure. If you start collecting, let's say you swipe your skin with gauze every half hour, and then you keep the sample that happens closest to the seizure, and people usually with the help of trainers, and there's a really good one, Service Dog Academy, that helps guide people through this training from afar even, and they will be able to work with the dog so that the dog gets to know that scent. The dog is rewarded for alerting to that scent. It's a very long process. I'm simplifying it greatly here, but eventually the dog comes to realize that scent is what you want to alert to, and so they've shown time and time again that the dogs are alerting to the scent. There have been a couple of studies finally recently that just came out when I was on deadline for the book that show that dogs, yes, there is a scent to this. We don't, again, we don't know what it is, and we don't have to know what it is. Whatever it is, if you can get a sample and train a dog that this is what you want to figure out. And now, some dogs, not all dogs, but with the right training, and if a dog is very driven for reward, they will be able to do that, because the dog's nose knows no bounds. I mean, we don't know what it is, but they figure it out. And again, it's a combination, probably a combination, a pattern of some chemicals that we're giving off, and we can't smell them, but a dog can. So Epilepsy Foundation, I'm not sure how long they're going to continue saying that there is, you know, dogs cannot be trained to do this. There's a place in Southern California called Little Angel Service Dogs that does a lot of different kinds of trainings, but they are doing a lot of seizure alert dogs. And they will train them individually on the person's scent. There's a young woman up in Washington State who sent her scents down, pre-seizure scents. They trained the dog on those for months. Came down to Southern California, met the dog, and within a few hours, the dog alerted, and she did have a seizure, and everybody cried. It's a very emotional thing when you realize that life-changing help is in the form of a four-legged best friend.
Right, with a fuzzy face and yeah. A look of love in its eyes. You mentioned this story sort of in passing, but I want to get some more detail about Baby Boo and how this dog began. It just kept pawing at her owner.
Yes, Baby Boo was the first. She is significant because she was the first dog who was written about in scientific literature back in 1989 for detecting cancer. She was one freelance dogs, and she was the sweetest, gentlest little dog. It was a rescue, and she was very maternal. They had a couple of other dogs, and she was always the one who looked after everybody, and just a sweet little dog. And one day, her person was gardening, and Baby Boo, this darling little thing, launched at this woman's leg and started attacking something on the back of her leg, and it was so uncharacteristic, and they couldn't figure out what was going on. But the woman that night tried to look around the back of her leg, and she saw something kind of dark, and it wasn't, the dog didn't hurt her, but she got away from the dog, but she showed it to someone at work, and that person had worked in the medical field before. She said, you should get that checked out, and it turns out that it was a melanoma. It was a malignant cancer, and the doctor said that they caught it just before it would have started to spread. So Baby Boo effectively saved her life, and years later, a couple of years later, a doctor in England was looking through some old files. He was a dermatologist. He was looking through files of old cases, and he came across her case, and in red it had said, dog saves woman's life, or something, the doctor's notes hand-scrawled. So he picked that up, and he looked into it further, and he interviewed her, and he wrote this little, it was a letter to the editor in Lancet, and it was the first thing that came up with in the scientific literature, and it actually was published in the Lancet on April Fool's Day, so probably a lot of people just thought, oh, come on now, but it did get people thinking about, look, could this be possible, and it took another decade for science to, there were some attempts, some brave and good attempts to see if dogs could detect cancer. It wasn't in university level, but it was pretty decent science. But then it was about a decade later that another letter to the editor in the Lancet by him and another doctor really kicked this off. And in the early 2000s, it began. This science began growing a little. It took a long time because there's a lot of skepticism. How can a dog detect cancer? How can you train a dog to detect cancer and not their person who they love, and maybe the person is giving off some scent because their metabolism is changing and the dog can detect it. But how do you do that in a laboratory setting? And they've done it. They have, dogs have been able to detect cancer in samples of blood, breath, saliva, sweat, urine, and poop. You know, those last two are things dogs love to smell. Sure. But it's a dream job for them. And the cancers they've been able to detect, and, you know, some of the early science may not have been as good as the latest science where it's like double, triple blind, and the person is not in sight. The person who knows what's going on is nowhere near. But they've detected breast cancer, ovarian, as we've talked about, lung, bladder, liver, prostate, skin, thyroid. I think there's no end to where they can detect cancer.
All kinds of things that the dogs can do. It's just amazing. There's even a chapter on dogs with multiple skills. They can detect a bunch of different things, and we can talk about that and much more when we continue our conversation with Maria Goodavage, who is the author of Dr. Dogs, How Our Best Friends Are Becoming Our Best Medicine. We'll come back to the Jefferson Exchange in just a bit. You can join the conversation by phone and email when we return in a minute 30. Let's pick up the discussion about dogs with multiple skills. Have handlers, owners, scientists just discovered by accident that a dog trained to do one thing can actually detect others as well?
Yeah, it's not something that they really train dogs for, but some dogs, like Terry Craik, the one I mentioned earlier, whose dog actually detects seizures and is able, I forgot to mention, the dog was trained to stop her seizures by, the dog has a magnet on his collar, and by snuggling close, he can set off a VNS device that's inside her chest area, and it can stop a seizure before it starts or in the middle of a seizure. So it's amazing, but this dog also, he's so close to her. He actually just passed about a month ago. But he kept sniffing at the back of her neck and sniffing and sniffing and sniffing and wouldn't leave the back of her neck alone for the longest time. And come to find out she had the side of her neck as well. And it was a thyroid cancer that she had. And the dog also started detecting her partner's low blood sugar. And, you know, it's hard to believe if you don't see this in action. But, you know, I saw the dog doing these things, and the dog would go to her partner who has diabetes and start sitting there and pawing at her. And sure enough, this went along with the significant decrease in blood sugar. So the dog was so attuned, and the dog lived for this. Brody just lived to help people. And so he kind of self-trained. And this, again, it's nothing that that the medical places will train dogs for, multiple tasks. And I just want to offer a quick heads up, because there are some really good organizations out there that do incredible training. There are some that really try and are well-meaning, and maybe the training isn't good. And then there are some organizations that are just trying to make a buck. So I urge people to be really cautious and to do a lot of homework, to check multiple sources if they're going to go with an organization, not just say, oh, my dog was trained by them. Just get a few different people, because some of these places offer dogs for free, and some will charge quite a bit. And charging quite a bit isn't a bad thing, but it's just if you're going to pay for a dog or even get a dog for free, you want to know that that dog is going to be trained well.
Okay, good advice. And in fact, you also mentioned in the book about you're not going to get into the whole thing about the scammery with service dogs and fake vests and all that stuff.
No, I don't get into that. I'm really sticking out of those waters, because that's a minefield no matter what you do. But yeah, there are way too many fake service dogs out there that ruin it for these dogs who are life saving and who are necessary in PTSD and for PTSD. And in fact, in the book, I talk a lot about how dogs are helping with, we're probably going to talk about this, but mental health issues as well.
I do want to get to mental health. I want to talk first, though, about some of the other things that dogs are capable of. I mean, they can detect, there's a whole section on superbugs. I mean, dogs can smell MRSA, for example?
Yeah, it's incredible. They're actually able to smell, they are training them on this methicillin-resistant stuff, MRSAs, they are Pseudomonas. They're finding that pathogens like Pseudomonas are detectable by dogs. And in fact, there are dogs now who are smelling a bacteria called C. diff, Clostridium difficile, at hospitals in Vancouver, where this can be a very deadly bacteria for people in vulnerable populations, which is a lot of what hospitals are made up of. And the dogs can sniff that out and before it spreads, and it's usually spread in feces. And I watched a dog do this at a Vancouver hospital, and the dog detected it, and they actually found that this is indeed a sample of that, you know, it could spread. So they're able to detect these superbugs, and in the book, I postulated that maybe one day dogs will be able to, and other scientists are saying, stop epidemics before they become pandemics, or to rein in pandemics, to help control pandemics. I had no idea at the time that we were going to be in a pandemic.
Right. So this brings up a question already dropped off a long time ago by Grumpy John in Grants Pass, who wants to know if they can detect the new coronavirus.
Ah, yes. That's a great question, and I'm glad somebody asked because I want to talk about that. Dogs are now, when I started hearing about the new coronavirus, I just started thinking, oh, they have to train, they have to see if dogs can detect this safely. And sure enough, there are some of the best organizations in the world. The ones I'm writing about, the ones I wrote about in the book, have set off on this path. And it's really exciting because these are the best facilities, the best universities working with science and dogs, the best trainers, and they are seeing if dogs can detect this. They have the samples. They're keeping dogs as safe as possible. In at least one instance at Auburn University, that they can sterilize the virus to the point where it's sterile. So, and still gives off a scent. So there is work being done on this, and the goal at first, it's in these initial studies, in these initial research phases, is to see if it even gives off a scent. If dogs can detect the scent of the virus that causes COVID-19 in a laboratory situation from samples, from sputum samples and throat samples and sometimes sweat samples, I guess. And then if the dogs can, the goal for most places is to see if dogs can be used to be stationed at places to screen people, at airports, who knows, maybe malls, so that they act as another line of screening to besides fever monitors. And if a dog can do that, they can. The scientists at the in London are saying that they could probably screen about 250 people an hour coming in and out of maybe sporting events. So there is a chance that dogs will be able to do this. And early research out of some place that I'm not allowed to say the name of or really talk about yet, but this is the first place that has completed initial study, a proof of concept study, as they call them, and the dogs did quite a good job. They're saying that dogs can detect this in the laboratory samples, and if indeed other places find that this is true, that is huge. And then it's a big step. It's a really big step to see if dogs can detect this on moving people or on people,
right,
even stopping people. So that's a big step, but I'm hopeful. In fact, for the paperback edition of the book, my editor let me write. We only had 800 space for 800 words, but he let me write something about this. And it's weird. It's kind of like time travel. What will be the scenario in October when my paperback comes out? We don't know. Will dogs have not been able to do it, or will they be stationed at your local airport?
That could be really interesting. Airports and sporting events and stuff like that where crowds gather, yeah.
Yeah.
We have an email here from Becca in Lane County. Wants to know if dogs and diabetes, if the dogs detect the low blood sugar through the breath.
Yeah, that's probably one of the places. There are places that have trained dogs on breath, on exhaled breath, for people with diabetes. So it could be the breath. It could be, they train them on saliva and sweat. So when I was at Dogs for Diabetics, they swabbed my back with gauze a couple of times because I don't have diabetes and they want to use me as a control. So we don't know exactly where the dogs are smelling it from, you know, in real life. It could be just the whole body and what we're giving off. But a lot of the studies, it's a good question because a lot of the studies on cancer use exhaled breath. and there's something in our exhaled breath, and the dogs can detect things like they've been able to detect stomach cancer, lung cancer from exhaled breath, and different types of cancers, and not just things that come out of your lungs, that's lung cancer. So it's amazing what the breath holds. There are so many hundreds of volatile organic compounds in, you know, throughout the human body, and we have no idea yet, but eventually what they're hoping for is rapid early detection, not through dogs. They're not saying that dogs will be in laboratories detecting your, you know, early stage ovarian cancer. They're hoping that technology will be able to take over, and there'll be electronic noses. Maybe you breathe into a tube and mm-hmm. at your next doctor's visit, and you'll be able to tell that. But that's away from the diabetes question, but there is a lot that dogs can probably tell from our breath.
All right. Well, on the way to talking about the mental health, let's take a pause at the physical brain, the Parkinson's disease. I mean, a dog's able to detect that too?
Yeah. Well, actually, what's interesting about that is that for once, it was a human who inspired dogs, because there's a woman in England that you may have heard about her, whose husband had Parkinson's, and one day she said to someone at a meeting with doctors, it was a conference or something, and she said, "Why do people with Parkinson's all smell a certain way?" And they said, "What?" And she said it was kind of a musky odor. And they put her to the test eventually when they figured out this would be kind of fun. And they gave her T-shirts from, I think, a dozen people, or more than that, but there were a dozen people who had Parkinson's. And she hit everyone but one. She got one wrong out of the 12 positive samples. Turns out the next year, the person with the 12th sample would be diagnosed with Parkinson's.
Oh, wow.
So then there's a place in Washington State, and one of the islands off of Washington State, where dogs are being trained. It's called Pads for Parkinson's, and they are pet dogs who come in, and they see if they can do this, and they train them to detect Parkinson's on T-shirts. They have all kinds of T-shirt samples from people who have Parkinson's, and then, of course, people who don't. And the dogs there work for chicken. They work for real chicken pieces, and they go around the scent wheel. I was up there last year doing a talk, and it was so much fun to watch them, and they have a ball, and they are able to, I did a book signing up there, and they had an event where they did a demonstration, and everybody brought their dogs. Everyone who had the training brought their dogs in, and the dogs nailed it time after time after time. It was and it was a huge packed room, and the dogs under pressure, they would just sit, or some dogs were just thrilled and they do like little bucking bronco action. And there's one little dog, I have a picture of her in the book, and she's this little diva, and she's a tiny little dog, and she wears a tutu, and like even the little dogs can do it. You think of scent dogs as Labrador retrievers.
Sure.
Or Goldens, but no, it's like any breed can do this.
Wow, that's amazing. So we have just enough time to talk about mental health a little, and you get into the story of Matthew, an example of somebody who really responded to a dog to help him with his autism spectrum disorder. And he calmed down instantly just upon meeting the dog.
Yeah, Matthew has a pretty autism spectrum disorder where he was very limited. He couldn't go out with his family to restaurants or anywhere, and the family was pretty hobbled by, you know, really they had to live around his condition, and everything was very overwhelming for him. Haircuts and doctor visits were horrible. Dentist visits, his mom had to hold him while the dentist did his teeth. He had long scraggly hair because he couldn't sit in to get a haircut because the little hairs would like literally hurt him when they fell to his shoulders and the sound. And he was they waited 4 years for a dog to be trained for him. There's a big long waiting list for these free dogs in Minnesota, and he got the dog, met the dog immediately. He just had tears. His mother had never seen him have tears for something sensitive, and the dog now goes with them everywhere. He can go to restaurants. He has his own. He'll want to be without his parents sometimes. He has his own table. He was a little kid when he got this, but he's about 11 or 12 now, he is thriving with this dog. They can go everywhere. They go on vacations. He can go on planes and doctor's visits and haircuts. His mom was crying because she is so grateful for this dog every time. And I have pictures in the book on my website of the dog with him on a gurney at the doctor's office or wherever. And it's a life changer. Now, this isn't olfaction. This is just the bond and the dog who's trained to mitigate things. And he helps calm him down when they're shopping. And it's a beautiful relationship. And it's a job that a lot of dogs are being trained for now, is to help with autism and PTSD and other conditions.
Just a couple seconds here. Is there some resistance still from the medical establishment about incorporating dogs in the ways that they've already been doing some or showing some success?
It's less and less. Certainly, and there are definitely some doctors some scientists who are skeptical about this. But when they see the science, when they read the papers, they're realizing this is real, and this is only going to be getting bigger and bigger in the future.
It's a big field already, as Maria Gudovich demonstrates in her book *Doctor Dogs: How Our Best Friends Are Becoming Our Best Medicine*. It is out now, as you heard. There'll be some discussion of coronavirus in the paperback edition coming out later this year. Maria, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was fun talking with you.
Pleasure. That will do it for today's exchange. We are online at jeffexchange.org. Our producer is John Baxter and Angela Decker of JPR News. Student assistant Randy Babbitt is at the controls today. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you very much for listening. Stay safe, and please join us next time on the Jefferson Exchange, and have a great day.